Today on Vox Talks, as the first COVID-19 cases are reported in Africa, what one study of the Ebola crisis tells us about how communities can respond. Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. In 2014, Ebola ripped through West Africa. The World Health Organization described the epidemic as the most severe acute public health emergency seen in modern times. And out of 28,000 reported cases, roughly half of them were in Sierra Leone. Also in Sierra Leone at that time, there was a team of researchers. They were performing an experiment in how to improve community health care in the country. In early 2014, little did they know that the Ebola crisis was going to provide the toughest possible test of whether their interventions were effective. And the results of their experiment can teach us a lot about how communities in the developing world can cope with healthcare crises. Well, one of those researchers was Andrella Dubé of the University of Chicago. She's also a CEPR fellow, and she joins me today. Andrella, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello, Tim. Thank you for having me on.
It's easy at the moment to think that this is the first time anyone in modern times has experienced an epidemic. Take us back to how serious that 2014 Ebola crisis was.
Well, just a couple of months into the crisis, the World Health Organization was already saying that never before had a level 4 pathogen infected so many people so quickly over such a broad geographic area and for so long. And that was just the beginning. In Sierra Leone, quarantines had to be set up around hotspots and the military brought in to enforce them. And by the end of the crisis, 2 years later, in Sierra Leone, a country of just 7 million people, not only were there 14,000 cases, but there were also 4,000 deaths. And the crisis exacted an economic toll of $2 billion.
So now let's go back to the beginning of your involvement with this. As I said, when the crisis hit, you'd already been working for several years with the government of Sierra Leone, some NGOs as well, to maximize the impact of free healthcare clinics. What was the challenge here for the government?
At the time we were working there in 2012, Sierra Leone was in pretty bad shape in terms of both poverty and health. 149 out of 1,000 babies were dying before reaching the age of 5, second worst in the world on that indicator. Mm. The primary healthcare system was totally broken. The quality of health services was abysmally low. The government tried to promote improvements, tried to promote greater access to the system and encourage its use by removing user fees for maternal and child care. And they increased the salaries of healthcare workers, including nurses, to try to make sure these fees wouldn't be charged illegally. But the government was still very worried that healthcare workers would exert little effort with nobody around to monitor them, and the quality of healthcare would remain very low. So they were very interested in testing efforts to improve accountability to see if these could boost the use of health clinics and improve health outcomes for people. But there was a catch.
Okay, what was the catch?
Well, the catch was that they were highly resource constrained. They didn't have extra budgets. They didn't have money to pump into the system. So they were very interested in non-financial approaches that would leverage social incentives to see if people in the communities could hold each other accountable.
So what interventions did you come up with to test in this experiment?
So we worked with the government and 4 international NGOs to experimentally test 2 interventions. The first instituted community monitoring over clinics. So community meetings were convened around scorecards, which provided basic information to people about the state of local healthcare. And in these meetings, community members met with clinic staff, and they levied their complaints about local health services. Like, why does the nurse not listen to us when we're trying to describe what's wrong with our kid? The clinic staff, in turn, levied their complaints. Like, why do you women not come into the clinic to deliver your babies? We can't help you from far away. And community members and clinic staff would come up with a joint action plan where both sides made commitments to try to improve things. The second one focused on non-financial awards. We introduced competitions among clinics and gave recognition awards to the staff at clinics that were doing really well, that were either the best performers or had shown strong improvement in their performance.
And before the epidemic hit, how well had these interventions been working?
What we found is that these interventions produced some immediate benefits. So within a year of their implementation, but still a year before the Ebola crisis, they had already succeeded in building up confidence and trust in the health system and in health workers. So patient satisfaction and the use of clinics were higher in intervention areas. So were beliefs around the relative efficacy of Western medicine compared to traditional healers. The community monitoring intervention in particular led to pretty substantial improvements in child health. For example, the likelihood of a kid under 5 dying fell by over 35% in these areas. And again, this was all before the Ebola crisis even emerged.
And I remember from the news reports at the time that the lack of confidence in this healthcare provision was one of the problems that anyone trying to stop this disease was encountering, because people were very scared to take their relatives to any medical facility, for example.
Yeah, this was a huge problem. Look, the key to curbing the spread of communicable diseases like Ebola is catching and isolating the cases quickly. And this requires getting people to come forward and get tested. But in Sierra Leone, there was stigma associated with the disease, and people typically did not trust the quality of government clinics. They thought if they brought their loved ones in, they wouldn't receive any care, and they would be condemned to die alone.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So instead, naturally, they hid sick family members instead of bringing them in.
When Ebola was in Sierra Leone, your interventions had been successful, but they had only been in place a short time, and they were not designed for a test as severe as this. I guess you're looking from the outside, and you must have been wondering whether or not your interventions would stand up to a test like this.
Absolutely. It's the first thought we had as we watched the crisis unfold. But you're absolutely right. We had never seen experimental evidence before that accountability interventions like this could work, not just during business as usual conditions, but during crisis conditions. That being said, our conjecture was very much that Ebola should be more contained in the places where these accountability interventions had been put into place, because that's where trust and confidence in the health system had been built up. And trust and confidence, as we just discussed, was such a critical reason why people were hesitating in actually seeking care during the crisis.
And so you got the first cut of your data back after the Ebola crisis. Did you find out that Ebola had been more contained in the areas in which we had these accountability interventions?
Well, what we saw at first totally surprised us. We were looking at the reporting of Ebola cases, and what we were finding is that there were actually more reported Ebola cases in the locations where the interventions had been implemented.
Oh.
But upon closer examination, it became clear that this was not because there was actually more underlying Ebola transmission in these places, but rather because more people were coming in and testing for the virus in these locations. So we were observing greater reporting of potential cases by individuals, including both those who ultimately tested negative as well as positive for the virus. Now, by getting tested, people could access greater medical care and treatment. And consistent with this, we also found that deaths out of Ebola cases actually fell disproportionately, approximately by a third more in the areas where we had been working.
So even though on a quick look, it looked like you hadn't had any effect at all, in fact, worse than no effect at all, when you look deeper into it, this was a healthcare success and it had stood up to the ultimate test.
Absolutely. What we were finding is in these places where greater confidence in the health system had been built up, people were coming forward and more willing to report their Ebola status, more willing to get tested. And this ultimately led to fewer Ebola patient deaths in these places.
So the question for the next few months is, what can we take from this to help African countries in the fight against COVID-19?
Yeah, it's a really important question. And I think there's two key lessons. The first is testing saves lives. So having enough tests is really critical. And this has obviously been a major challenge and a major constraint to date in many of the countries where COVID-19 is critically in the crisis phase. But what we also see is that those tests, even if we secure enough of them, won't do any good unless people are willing to go in and take them and use them appropriately. And that's where the second lesson comes in. What we are seeing is that trust and confidence in the health system is critical. And that means that national leaders and health officials have to offer clear information on the do's and don'ts of the pandemic. But trusted local voices are needed to amplify those messages, because that's what makes it more likely that people will listen and alter their behavior to do things like socially distance. we had actually put some of these interventions into place ahead of time. But I think trusted community voices can always rise up. In Sierra Leone, religious leaders, Christian and Muslim, worked together in campaigns to promote critical health practices like safe burials and hand washing, which ended up being a real game changer in altering community behavior and containing the spread of the disease through events like funerals. So yes, building trust through longer run community engagement is critical, but shorter run efforts like this can help as well.
It is a timely reminder, isn't it, that even if you are resource constrained in a healthcare crisis, local bottom-up efforts to build confidence in communities can be as important as the sort of big government programs and initiatives that focus on technology and infrastructure.
Absolutely. But I would see these two sets of efforts as complements.
Yes.
Especially in settings where baseline trust in government is low. So government resources have a critical role to play in terms of financing equipment and coordinating their distribution or even charting out recommendations for policies like lockdowns. But the big programs are less likely to deliver benefits if they're regarded skeptically or suffer from low take-up or even outright hostility. So I believe we'll see the greatest success when they're complemented by local efforts that encourage take-up, that reinforce messages about seeking appropriate treatment and complying with behaviors like stay-at-home orders that are going to help turn this health crisis around.
We hope that any of those measures may help in the next few months. It's certainly going to be extremely important, literally a matter of life and death. Andrella, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Tim. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
There are actually two papers from this research. The full story is in Building Resilient Health Systems, Experimental Evidence from Sierra Leone and the 2014 Ebola Outbreak. And the authors are Darren Christensen, Andrella, Johannes Haushofer, Bilal Siddiqui, and Martin Voss. And there is a shorter one, Community-Based Crisis Response, Evidence from Sierra Leone's Ebola Outbreak. Same authors. That's forthcoming in AEA Papers and Proceedings. Remember to keep in touch with all the COVID-19 coverage at voxeu.org. We're adding to it every day. This is not the first and will certainly not be the last Vox Talk on the subject. So subscribe to Vox Talks on your podcast platform and you can always look up our archive at voxeu.org/vox-talks.